You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 12th, 2015. You're listening to episode 137. My name is Mr. Rob. Whenever I come over to Jason's house, his son goes, "It's Mr. Rob." And I'm at Jason's house right now. Hi.
That's true. Hey.
Yeah. I'm Mr. Rob.
He does, yeah.
Yeah.
He's called me Mr. Dad before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's sometimes cool. He just randomly puts Mr. in front of names, so.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. Yeah, I get a kick out of that. Mr. Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We try and be polite, so, you know, like, I don't want to be, like, stodgy like our parents sometimes were, like, "This is Mr. Couch."
Oh,
like,
no.
That's dumb. So, say their first name and put Mr. in front of it. So, as you're addressing an adult, sounds nice.
Sure. Yeah. That's cool. I dig it. Yeah. I dig it. Well trained. Good job.
I try.
What's new? How's it going?
It's going. It's a new year. That's exciting.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
It is. Yeah. You make any New Year's resolutions?
No, I don't do that.
No?
You know why? Because you just break New Year's resolutions.
Oh, man.
In fact, the last New Year's resolution I made was to not say nasty things about Formula D anymore.
You know, that's right.
And I made it a whole year.
You did pretty well. When I vowed not to complain about Cards Against Humanity anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did I do on that? Not as good as you, I think.
No, I think you complained about them quite a bit.
No, I wouldn't say quite a bit, but... I think I didn't do as well as you did, because you still ragged on Formula D a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you ragged on Formula D 5 times, I probably ragged on Cards Against Humanity 7 times.
Or 10 or 14.
No, not that much. Not that much. No.
It doesn't come up as often. It's really easy to bring Formula D up and say how much you hate it.
Hey,
it's always applicable.
It's almost like you've already done that twice in this episode in the course of about 3 minutes.
I know, right?
Should we make new resolutions for this year?
For the show? Okay, let's do that. See, this is one of those things we thought of on the fly just now that we should have thought of ahead.
We should have thought of in advance to plan for it. Yeah, that's tough.
I would say that our resolution should be that we should think more ahead and plan for stuff, but I'm not going to shoot the moon here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we already talked about in our year in review for 2014 that we wanted to, what we wanted to accomplish.
Make more prototypes.
Make more prototypes and do more bonus episodes.
Yes.
So we already said that. So I want to try and come up with something different.
We could just also just try and follow through on those things.
Well, we're going to try to do that. Yeah, but, you know, those were not official resolutions. Resolutions are usually about trying to you know, end bad habits, right? Or become a better person. So I think I'm going to resolve to...
Nothing.
I got absolutely nothing.
I really thought you were going to have something. I was like, good, maybe this will give me an idea.
No, I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing. I need to resolve something. I am going to resolve. No, that's not going to happen. I was going to resolve to get the show edited on Saturdays, but that'll never happen.
Well, it's not like I'm going to post them on Saturday.
I know, right? So who cares about that?
The only thing that worries me is like something terrible happens on Sunday and you didn't get to post the show.
Yeah, well...
Like you wake up and you're sick.
Yeah.
You've done that though and still had to edit the show.
And still figured it out, yeah.
Or like you come home and there's a tree in your car.
Yeah, and I still managed to
he
do
did.
It that
he
evening.
He told everyone it wasn't coming out and then it did.
And then it did,
You actually sent me a message that said, there's a tree in Christine's car.
I think I sent you a picture of it.
Yeah, you said, I have to do this before I edit the show. Don't expect it today. And then like 4 hours later, you sent me the show. I was like, what?
Yeah, well, because I didn't have a chainsaw. There's only so much that I could clean up. So I had to just go in the house and get my mind off it. Yeah.
I resolved that we should have more guests on this year.
Okay.
We were a little skimpy with the guests last year. 2013, we were better with that. We kicked off our whole third host thing where we would have like a random extra host on with us, like a guest host thing.
Yeah, especially in like the last quarter of the year.
Yeah.
I don't think we had anybody in the last quarter.
Just
we?
When you were gone.
Yeah.
I had 2 guests to fill out.
Yeah, we should try and do that. I resolve to try to play more of other people's prototypes. How about that?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I need to do a better job of that. So I will make an effort to do more print and plays of other people's games and try them and help them.
I've got a good one. Here's my resolution. I resolve to be better at responding to emails that you guys send us to the podcast email. Now, listen, I want to be clear. If you sent that email last year, it doesn't count. Yeah. It's got to come this
year. Don't even try. Give up, all right? Abandon all hope.
I try really hard to keep it organized. I don't always. Now that I'm thinking about that, we're doing that. I'm going to forward you those two voicemails that we put on the last episode.
Yeah, okay. That's probably a good idea. You know what? Don't even bother. Actually, no, you do need to do that because I still have to log into the podcast email address because I can't download the file when you forward it to me because all you can forward to me is like a link to listen to it online. So I still have to log in and go into our Google Voice settings and download the MP3 file. But if you forward it to me, I can more easily identify it in that list.
Right.
Yeah. So Buzz. Anyway.
Was that from me sending those emails?
Yeah. I'm on your Wi-Fi, so it's quick. Yeah.
Okay, so now that that's out of the way, what you been playing? Man. Oh, who knows? Probably Prison Architect. Oh, the PS4 is not ready yet. Blah, blah, blah.
Play a little Parade.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Parade's a great
Parade
game.
Parade is so good. Yeah. Parade is so good, man. Man, what a great game.
Simple concept. Easy game.
Super
complex
Gosh.
Choices. You want to punch stuff when you play that game.
I want to punch myself for not coming up with that. Yeah. I just want to beat myself in the face for not coming up with that simple and brilliant idea.
Right.
Yeah, it's such a good game.
I've been playing a game called Squeeze.
Squeeze?
It's another game I got at the Five Below.
Yeah, the $5 store.
No, this is technically just 6 and up. I do play with my son, but he doesn't quite understand the concept of it. But so basically,
he's 3?
He's almost 3.
Almost 3.
Basically, the board is like a wooden board. And there's a spring in it, and you pull the spring back, right? Like there's a rod, and you pull it back all the way. And then there's like this wall that moves all the way back. Mm-hmm. And you put all these discs in with little handles on them, discs of different size.
Okay.
And then you slowly let it go so it settles. And then the idea is you want to pull out a disc without letting the thing move any closer in. And there's like a measurement thing so you can see if it moves too far or not. Does that make sense?
Not
so there's
at
like
all.
Pressure, right?
Okay.
So like you pull it back and now there's pressure and there's all these discs in here of varying sizes. And the idea is I want to pull a disc out without this bar sliding forward. Because obviously as you take discs out, it's going to compress, right?
Okay. These discs are laying flat on the board?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're varying sizes. So there's always going to be those gaps. Kind of like in the game Don't Break the Ice where you know there's going to be a loose spot and you're like tap and go, tap, it falls through.
Okay.
So it's like that. And if it doesn't move more than one, like if it doesn't move a full line, then you get to keep it.
Hmm.
And at the end, it's worth points. Obviously, the bigger discs are worth more points because those are harder to get.
Yeah.
It's not a good game. It's not a terrible game, but it's by no means a good game. The construction's not super great, so like...
You're really selling it.
I'm not saying play it or go buy it. I'm just saying that what you've been playing, not what you've been loving.
Yeah, got it.
So yeah, it's all right. I mean, it was $5, so I'll buy pretty much lots of games at Five Below, even if they don't look great.
Yeah,
just because they're $5. Fun. Yeah, so
and you have a need to spend money on garbage.
Yes.
Yeah, you just can't help yourself.
I can't.
Yeah,
I love buying crappy games.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right.
So that's about it.
That's fine.
So for our topic this week, the third host of the show, Andy Lennox, came through and gave us a topic, like he always does when we need a topic.
And then he left without even sticking around to record.
Right. You know, he just drove over 2 hours to my house and then was like, guys, here's the topic.
Right. And then he took off.
He just left.
We're like,
weird.
Hey, do you want a beer or something? He's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. And then he just drove back two hours home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy's crazy.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Freaking weirdo.
So here's what happened. He gave us the topic of Perfect Information, because we haven't talked about that enough lately. So we're not going to actually talk about Perfect Information in that way. Don't worry, guys. Calm down. That was like last year when we talked about it, okay?
Yeah, it's been like a whole year.
Actually, it hasn't been. It's been like a week, because we talked about Perfect Information, because that's what we're talking about.
We talked about like the last 4 episodes in a row, though.
Well, it's a perfect topic to give information about.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny.
Okay,
because you used the words in the...
I did.
Go on. I lose track.
So this is what Andy said. Andy said, take as a thought experiment, take a game that is Perfect Information and make
throw it out the window.
And just throw it away. Don't talk about it, guys. No. He said, take a game that's Perfect Information and add an element that makes it not Perfect Information. And then he said, take a game that is not Perfect Information and take something away to make it perfect.
Well, he was saying, I think his what he said was, take a game that has secret or hidden information and make it perfect information.
Right.
And then, vice versa.
Right.
Yeah. So not just necessarily turn a Perfect Information game into the other, but specifically hidden information.
Right.
Is what he was talking about. which I think is an interesting detail to focus on.
Great.
Yeah.
Let's focus on that detail.
Okay.
Cool. Totally blows what I was going to say.
So well, what were you going to say before
no,
you?
Fine. No, you go. Let's see. You just go.
Well, Smart guy. I'm not there yet.
Okay. Well, what do you got? Say something.
So hidden information.
Yes.
All right.
Name a game.
A game with... Let me talk about Phantom Society. Okay?
Oh, gosh. Phantom
Society. Because I like that game a lot.
Yeah, that game would literally not be playable without hidden information.
Well... what you would need to do is you would need to limit the ability. So
let me just be clear. So what I've designed here is the perfect information deduction game. Do you see why that's funny and why that doesn't work?
No. He's saying let's just the point is to it's a thought experiment, right?
Okay. So
Phantom Society. The point is one player is a team of ghosts. The other one is a team of ghost or paranormal investigators, right? And so the ghosts are hidden somewhere on the board. And they can there are rules about what kinds of tiles they can remove from the board, which means they're wrecking a part of this mansion. Okay. And so based on what tiles are removed, the investigators need to make a decision or draw a conclusion about where that ghost is hiding, that ghost is hiding. Okay. So perfect information game without any hidden information would mean you can see where those ghosts are.
Right.
Okay, so that kind of kills the whole concept of that game.
I believe that's what I already said.
Yes. Yeah, so what I'm saying here is as it is right now, the ghost, as I said, the ghost is limited on what tiles they can remove from the game, what rooms they can destroy, essentially, mm-hmm. thematically. The investigators, though, can investigate any room they want, anywhere on the board, so they can basically turn over any tile they want at any time.
Right.
So if the investigators know where the ghosts are, that would be too easy. So what you would then have to do is limit the investigators' ability to reach specific tiles. So what you would need to do is you'd have to say, well, if there's four ghosts, then you would also need four investigators, and the four investigators must have restrictions on how they can move on the board.
Okay.
And so then they can only flip a tile. Or remove a tile if they're standing on it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you have to have two of them together in order to do that. And then you would also, I think, need to give the ghosts the ability to move to get away from them. And then by removing tiles, so by the ghosts destroying rooms from the board, it would limit and restrict the movement of the investigators on the board.
Okay.
Okay. So that would fundamentally change the concept of the game, but have the same themes, have the same presentation on the table.
Okay.
Okay. So that's there's there. Go.
Okay.
Do better.
All right, do better. So let's take Clue, classic game.
Okay.
And you're like, Clue is completely 100% predicated on hidden information, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have hidden information, it ain't the game of Clue.
Mm-hmm.
But what if instead you know who the killer is,
mm-hmm.
you know what the killer, you know the motive or the whatever, you know the room, you know the thing.
The weapon.
You can see all the clues everyone's holding, right? Everything's face up, right?
Okay.
So then the game becomes... It doesn't matter what you know. It only matters what you can prove.
Okay?
So when I go to a room and I make a declaration, I can look at the cards you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, okay, you have two weapon cards. Or you have, like, so you have the wrench and you have the,
There's no wrench and Clue.
I'm just saying things. Shut up. There's a pipe. You have the
lead pipe.
There is a wrench in Clue.
There's not.
Yeah, there is. There's a wrench.
There's a wrench? It's been a long time since I played Clue.
Pretty sure there's a wrench
in Clue. I don't think so. There's the knife. There's the candlestick. There's the rope. There's the lead pipe.
And there's a fifth one. There's a gun.
Oh, there's a gun. There's not a gun. There's no gun in Clue. What are you talking about?
Up now.
No. I don't think
there's a wrench. There's a revolver, jerk.
Is there a revolver?
There's six of everything, and the last one is a freaking wrench. I am looking it up right now because I hate you.
Am I having a horrible brain fart right now?
Yes.
Really? I never have brain farts. What am I saying? I always forget things. I forgot how many squares there were across on a chessboard a few weeks ago. So did you, though. So give me a break.
Yeah,
here.
But I never claim to remember all sorts of things.
It's hard to remember things when you're recording a podcast.
I just claimed that you were dumb.
This is compelling listening right here while I stall for time and Jason looks up clue pieces on his phone.
Pretty much hoping that you go ahead and cut some of this out, but you probably
It's
won't.
Funnier this way.
You're too lazy.
It's funny. Super lazy, dude. I am super lazy.
But like if we took the time to record it, we might as well
fill the time with it, you know? I mean, because why the heck wouldn't we do that? You know, I mean, I was saying to my wife the other day, sometimes I just like to let the podcast go, and I think it's kind of funnier that way. Honestly, I wasn't saying that to her at all. I'm really just trying to stall for time while Jason wastes so much of it playing with his phablet, his giant phone tablet.
My app fab.
His app fab, which he needs two hands to hold up to his head. You're really bad at searching Google, apparently.
No, I'm just... The weapons. Here we go.
Okay.
Okay, you name the weapons.
Okay, there was the knife, the rope... The candlestick, the lead pipe. Those are the four that I had.
The knife, the rope, the candlestick, the lead pipe.
Okay.
You're
right about revolver.
Revolver.
Yeah.
And wrench.
There is a wrench?
Yes.
All right.
In the Cluedo version in Germany, it was the spanner, which I'm assuming is a wrench. And funny thing to note, the lead pipe, called lead piping in earlier UK editions, all the early tokens were actually made out of lead and therefore posed a risk of lead poisoning. So, hey, funny thing there, kids. Try not to hurt yourself.
I should just give up on this whole gaming thing right now and just throw the towel.
So let's get back to what I was saying was.
Okay.
So like in Clue, a common thing with Clue is if I were to say to you the wrench in the billiard room with Professor Plum.
Yeah.
Now, I actually don't want it to go all the way around. I want to see you. I want you to show me your clues to point at them so I can mark them off, right?
We've already seen them.
Right, but I have to be able to collect evidence. Do you understand?
Oh, so you need to prove it conclusively.
Right. I need to be able to basically alibi out everyone. So you think about your clues are actually alibis. So when I say Professor Plum and you show me him, you just gave him an alibi. So I know it's not Professor Plum. Now, I already knew that, right? But I'm the detective trying to prove that. So one of the classic things you do in Clue is if I say two things that you have, you get to pick which one you show me. Mm-hmm. Now, if you play Clue the right way, you will always show me the same one. So if I say the wrench in the billiard room, you're always going to give me the billiard room. Why? Because you can always show that to me.
Right.
So that way... Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, it makes it 100% strategy. It would not really be a fun game.
No, you know what? It would just turn down into a die roll, and who gets the best rolls to move from room to room. That's how that game turns
into. The other thing I would do is get... Oh, well, hey, it's a perfect information game now.
Oh, you're right. So you have to have set movement.
You just have to have set movement, which there's a strategy version of Clue where you just have set movement.
I've heard of that, yeah.
So, anyways, so that's what I would do.
Hmm.
Hey, way better than your idea. And a game people have heard of. So that's cool.
People for Phantom Society.
Only people that listen to this show.
It's a good game, dude.
Nobody's heard of it.
Yeah, if you've been to any convention and seen the Aiello booth, you've seen big standees of it.
That looked like it was a game about something really sweet and not just a little game that was not...
The worst thing you can say about Aiello's games is that they have incredible artwork that sometimes is better than the game itself.
Sometimes is misleading as to what's in the game.
Yeah. That is the worst thing you can say about Aiello. Is Aiello or Yellow? Whatever. Anyway.
Anyways.
Phantom Society is a great deduction game for two players.
It's not a bad deduction game at all.
It's a great deduction game for two players.
When I see the artwork, though, I'm like, why is this game not way more about in-depth stuff?
Well.
Anyways. So, vice versa. Well, let me go first this time since you went first last time.
Okay.
Okay. So, I think that the first thing you want to do is start with chess because that's the most well-known perfect information game ever. You can disagree with me. You might be right.
I don't know.
Actually, probably Mancala is, right?
Oh, yeah, probably.
But I'm not going
to
say Mancala.
I don't know
how to play it. So Chevy Dodd, if you're listening, sorry. He loves that. So let's take chess and make chess have hidden information. Not perfect information, but hidden information. Well, somebody kind of already did that. That game is called Stratego.
Mm.
Stratego is basically chess. With hidden information, right? They made a wall, and on one side is a picture of your character with their stats, and on the other side is a wall that looks the same on every side. So if I look at your side of the board, I can't tell who you have. I mean, that basically, to me, is as close as you're going to get to chess with hidden information. Now, that's kind of cheating, I mean, but I can't think of another way to have chess have hidden information. I mean, you could just take the standard chess pieces and you could put a thing in front of them, but the problem is based on their movement.
Now, you know, I've never played Stratego. I'm not exactly sure how it's structured. So you say there's like literally there's a physical wall down the middle of the board?
No. Your piece. Picture a chess piece, except for half the chess piece is a wall, and the other half isn't a chess piece at all. It's flat. It has a picture on it. So like this is what you see, and on this side of my hand, which is the other side, it's a picture of my character. So I have a group of characters on a chessboard style board. When I move them, you can't tell who they are.
Okay, so basically, because people can't see your hand and what you're doing there.
Right.
So it's just like it's just a flat standee, basically. And on one side, there's a picture of the chess piece, and on the other side is blank. And the picture of the chess piece is facing me because it's my piece.
Right.
And my opponent only sees a blank
correct
thing. Okay.
But sometimes I can look, but then I have to remember what they are as they're moving.
All right. But based on how they move, you can figure out what they are.
I think they mostly move the same in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. So here would be an idea to make chess hidden information. Okay.
Hmm.
So 50% of your pieces, including... So you take the king and the queen, and you randomize them. No, the king and the queen, it doesn't matter. King and queen are king and queen. All the pieces you have duplicates of, 50% of them are ghost pieces, and the other 50% are actual pieces. The ghost pieces have like red dots on the bottom. The regular pieces have green dots on the bottom. So when I'm moving my pieces around, you don't know if they're actually real pieces or not. I don't know how that would play. Maybe they have like some sort of special ability, or maybe nothing happens when you hit them, or maybe if you try and kill them, you die.
Hmm.
But that would be a way to do it, basically to put information on the bottom of a chess piece. So that like the two rooks aren't the same as each other. They move the same, but they're not the same.
What if you made chess a roll and move game?
That would be a terrible game. Also, that's not hidden information. That's random information.
You're right. That's true.
You said, and I quote, let's focus on hidden information.
You're absolutely right. Yep. Yep. That was what Andy suggested, hidden information. Yes.
Well, Andy's a smart guy. So.
That's tough, man. I'm not sure what that would do to chess.
It would make it not fun, or a different game. And in which case, why make it a chess theme? Because people would make fun of you for making a chess variant.
Yeah.
So what game would you do that to?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm struggling all of a sudden to think of any other perfect information games that would have any opportunity for that.
Checkers.
Thanks. No, okay. Well, that's fine. I think I can't think of anything else that I could explore any compelling concepts with.
Checkers could be the same thing, though. You look at the bottom of your checkers pieces, you could have a mark on them.
Yeah.
That something would happen if you could get those to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You score points to them. They don't get king. They just score points.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to get to the other side, but they're also targets. So you have to decide, do I want to hold back with those or move those forward, or what am I going to do? Yeah. Done. I did it for both of us.
Good.
Wow.
Thanks. Can you scat a little bit there again for me?
Good.
That's probably enough, eh?
Okay.
Okay. I think so. I think we're done with that. How about you pitch a game?
Okay. Well, so this week I'm not going to actually pitch a game. I'm going to go back to a game I talked about before and kind of not re-pitch it, but I want to explore it some more because it's a game I've been working on when I've got time. And I'm liking it right now. I'm liking the new ideas for it. But I'm also feeling like maybe I'm overdoing it. So I thought I'd bring it to the show and let Rob tell me all the things I'm doing wrong and then I can then fix them. So,
go. Yeah. I'm all for telling you when you're wrong.
I know, right? So the game is called An Out Come the Wolves. It was my my game about homesteaders in Alaska who were trying to build up their homestead, but there were packs of wolves that kept eating their faces.
And this is the one that I called out on the year-end show
as being
one of my favorite prototypes you did.
Which is what made me think about it again. Yeah. So, hey, sometimes the year-end show actually serves a purpose. Yay! So the idea is... the game was that you you were trying to build up your homestead, and for everything you built, you would, on your turn, you would choose resources. By picking those resources, you would then attract wolves. Basically, you go into the woods to draw resources, and every time you drew a resource card, you'd have to take a wolf card face down. As soon as night happened, you'd flip over your wolf cards, and you'd realize like the wolf could be one wolf on that card, or it could be up to four wolves on the card. Or it could be an alpha wolf that, you know, and basically
by going out into the woods and looking around, you're drawing attention of these predators.
Yes. Yeah. So then they're going to come for you. So, so what would happen is, then nighttime would happen. I would have to deal with wolves, and any ones I couldn't deal with would wreck some of my stuff. And then they would move on to your house, all the way back to player one. So player one gets super hosed every turn. Mm-hmm. But player one changes every turn.
Turn order changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's important, because, you know, sucks to be player one every turn if that's the worst position in the game.
Right.
If you kill wolves, you get points for that, and you also get points for what you build, but you lose things. So it used to be really simple. Like, the way you lost things was for every wolf card left over that you can't deal with, and if there were four wolves on a card, but you can only kill two of them, you might as well not kill any of them because it doesn't count. You have to eliminate a whole card.
Right.
The whole little sub-pack.
The whole pack. Of, yeah,
basically. So... okay, so, and then for every card you had left over, you would lose an item, whether it was a fence or a house or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And they wrecked some of your crap.
Yeah, and there was an upgrade system. So, like, you start with a lean-to, but if you got some resources, you could trade those resources and your lean-to in to get a shack. Mm-hmm. Then you could trade those in. Now, there were limited supply. So, like, everybody gets a lean-to, but there are only two shacks. So, if I'm the first two guys to build a shack, the guys with lean-tos are waiting until I upgrade my shack.
Right.
So that they can now buy the shack because there's only a limited supply. And I thought that was kind of a fun upgrading thing. Mm-hmm. Cause you might strategically hold off a little longer because you want to screw the other guy.
Sure.
Okay. So at the beginning of the game, let's talk about the new version. So here's where I'm at now. One of the things that was really hard to quantify was that you lost your stuff. Like, you just lost random stuff on your farm. Like, wolves just wanted to, like, tear your house apart and run away. That's dumb. I don't like that. So, instead, you had said something, and I don't know what made it occur to me, but I thought, what if in your fence you had a flock of animals? Like, you've got chickens, you've got sheep, you've got cows, maybe some pigs, I don't know. But they're all worth different points at the end of the game. Your fence has basically, for lack of a better term, hit points or damage it can take. So does your lean-to. And of course, inside your lean-to is you. So if they ever get into your lean-to and eat you, then you lose the game. Okay. You start the game with a bow and arrow. And every turn you can kill one wolf with a bow and arrow. You eliminate that wolf and you're done. Now your fences and your lean-tos allow you also to ignore a wolf. So you can ignore with your fence. You can ignore, I think, two or three wolves, and with your lean-to, you can ignore one wolf, right? And then those both also have 5 hit points each. So here's what happens. On my turn, I draw some cards. Oh, and there are 4 stacks of these cards, resource cards. 10 cards in each stack. You can draw from any stack. So on my turn, I draw a card, I draw a wolf card, right? And then it's your turn. And we just keep going back and forth. Like, we keep going in a circle like that until someone finally says... It's dusk. Like, the sun's about to set.
So anybody can call that at any time.
Yeah, except for the first player can't.
First player has to draw a card.
Anyone else can. Yep. So when that happens, so that basically there's the pressure loss aspect, right?
Yeah.
Now, when two of those piles are empty, the game is over at the end of that round.
And there's 4 piles of 10 each?
Yeah. So it should take a while, but not too long.
Yeah. Okay.
So... we'll see. If that goes too fast, maybe it'll be 3 piles, or maybe it'll be all the piles.
Yeah, well, fast is not necessarily bad.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm going for, is that this is a 15 to 20 minute game.
Okay.
Good enough. So when somebody declares dusk, you then are allowed to use your resources to do whatever you want. You can buy some upgrades, and player one, who gets hosed for the rest of the game, gets to go first. Mm-hmm. So they get the best chance at upgrading, and then it goes back around to player four, presumably, if there are four people playing. They spend their resources, and then now they have to deal with their wolves. So now they flip over their wolf cards, right? Because they don't know what they have.
Starting with player four.
Yeah. And then it's going to work backwards to player one.
Starting
player now is player two next turn. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So So basically, when you're player one, you get hosed, but you get to be the ultimate jerk the next round because you have it the easiest, because now you're last.
Yeah.
Which means that you... So what happens is... here's how this works. I flip my wolves, my wolf cards, and I have to decide what I'm going to do. So I've got four of them, say, right? One has four wolves, one has two, one has one, and the other one has one as well. So, okay, so I've got a bow and arrow. I've got a lean-to that says I can ignore one wolf, and a fence that says I can ignore three, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look at the cards. Obviously, I've got an arrow. I can kill one wolf.
One wolf.
Might as well kill one wolf, right? So I'm going to kill the single wolf card. I'm going to take that. Boom. That's points at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And that comes out. It's out of the game now. But don't put it in the box. Keep it there. So now there's one card with one wolf, one with two, and one with three, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I can ignore three wolves.
Your fence. Oh, I'm sorry.
So okay. I'm going to take that one and I'm going to pass it to you, Rob, because you're the next player.
Yeah.
So now that's your problem.
Right.
Then I'm going to say, all right, now I've got two wolves left, two wolf cards.
Right. A four and a one.
No, a two and a one.
A two and a one.
Yeah. I can ignore one with the lean two. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to just take it, throw it away. I'm going to send it to you, actually, because basically what's going to happen is if my farm is empty, they're going to go to the next farm. Now, the last wolf card with two on it,
mm-hmm.
I have to deal with that. I can't kill them.
They're going to break through your fence.
Oh, well, they're going to do damage. They're each going to do... So every wolf does one damage, right?
Okay.
So this is where it gets a little more strategy in, right? So now I get to say, how much damage can I have, right? So I've got 5 hit points on my... my lean-to, and 5 hit points on my fence. Okay, so let's go ahead and take 2 damage to my lean-to. Or I could do 1 and 1 if I wanted, right? I can spread it out however I want. And I just have little tokens, and I put those tokens on there. So now my fence has taken a damage, and so has my lean-to.
Okay.
And then that wolf is done, because that wolf, he attacked, right? So
yeah.
That wolf then goes to the bottom of the... wolf pack pile. So they basically, the idea is this, that in the easy wolves to pick off are the ones that are just ones and twos, right?
Yeah.
So those tougher ones are going to keep getting shoved back to the bottom.
Yeah.
When that happens, that means later in the game, it's going to get worse and worse, which I think is representative of, you know what I mean? Like the situation getting more dire, okay, right?
Sure.
There are also alpha wolf cards, and alpha wolf counts as three wolves and you cannot ignore it.
Okay.
You have to deal with it.
You have to kill it or take the hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens if they break through, right? Well, if they, like I said, if they break through your lean-to, if I take 5 damage to my lean-to is now open. If there's a wolf left, it's going to kill me and I'm out of the game.
If one wolf card manages to do 5 damage then and knock out your lean-to and then they're done, if there is another wolf card.
Right.
Okay.
Then they can eat me.
Okay.
But the idea is you're trying to avoid that. You're sacrificing your animals to save yourself, okay, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, your cows and your sheep and chickens and stuff.
So when a wolf first breaks through to my fence, I'm going to have it eat chickens because chickens are the wimpiest things, right? But I'm thinking it might be cool, like if some of the wolf cards are more specialized, like if this wolf card breaks through, it will eat one cow. Guaranteed, like boom, done. So those are stacked at the end of the game. Now you can get more of those during the game when you're drawing resources. You can either get resources, which is a generic term, which allows you to upgrade things or fix things. You get, either cows, chickens, or whatever, or you get bullets. So, bullets, how do bullets work? Well, a bullet, can kill up to 4 wolves. You take a bullet, you lay it face up in front of you. Every time you use it, you turn it sideways, you turn it again, you turn it again. Once it's right side up again, throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to use them all that way. You don't have to use them all at once, but you can just keep turning it. Right. So that's where I'm at right now with that. Okay. So you can always take your resources and fix things. Two resources will always, if you use, how was I saying this? Two resources fixes 1 point of damage. Now the kicker to that is the smallest resource card is 3 resources. So the idea is to force you to try and do some risk reward and some pressure luck here, right? Like, so if I use a 3-1 to fix one damage, I've wasted one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I have two threes, so now I've got six, now I can fix three damage, right? And then I'm even. But there may be times when you're like, gosh, I have to fix this. Otherwise, I'm going to get toasted. So then you will... Remember, when you're making those choices, you don't know how many wolves are coming. You just know how many cards are coming for you.
Yeah, okay. So all the different cards we have here, we have four piles of 10 resource cards each.
Yep.
Okay, and resources are they just generic resources, or are they...
Resources are generic.
Okay.
And there's bullets, and then there's animals you can get.
Like, okay, and those are all in those four piles of 10?
Mixed up.
And you don't know what you're going to get until you turn over a card.
Right.
Okay. So I might get... So I might get a generic resource, or I might get an animal, or I might get a bullet.
Right. And the generic resources are... Three resources in one card, four, five, and six.
Okay, three, four, five, six.
Yeah.
So, and call them sticks or whatever. Yeah.
They were originally called logs, but I just dropped a generic, like, it would be like a picture of, like, rock, like a rock and a log and some other things.
Okay, so.
Maybe some food.
So they're basically just number cards. Number cards you can spend to fix things or buy upgrades.
Yes.
Okay. So then you've also, so you've got those four piles. You've got a pile of... wolf cards.
Yep.
Okay, and there are how many of those cards in the game?
25,
okay. And then you've got your fences and structures.
Your buildings, yep.
Your buildings, okay. And those are available for purchase.
Yep.
Anytime anybody who wants to can look through that deck and see what they're going to buy. Are there other cards in the game?
Just your starting cards, which are the lean-tos, the fences, and the arrows.
Okay, all right. And then you've got markers for damage markers.
Yeah, just tokens. And the cattle and all that kind of stuff are just cubes as well. Pink cubes for pigs. That's the way I'm doing it right now. So like yellow for chicken, pink for pig, white for cows.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
So when you're getting that card, you're not putting that card out next to your lean-to. You're throwing that card away and putting out cubes.
Well, because otherwise everybody starts with a good deal of animals.
Oh, they do.
They start with several, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, that's the idea. Because those are your buffers. That's what keeps you in the game.
Okay, so at the start of the game, you have a fence, you have a lean-to, and you have and an arrow, and you have...
Some animals.
Some animals,
yeah.
Okay.
I think it's like two cows, two sheep, two pigs, and five chickens or something like that.
Okay.
Or four chickens.
All right. Now, one of the problems that I recall with the prototype that we played before is that it was too easy to avoid the wolves.
Right. I made that harder.
Okay.
So I beefed up the wolves, so you're less likely to get just one wolf.
Okay.
And then in addition to that, I made them allow you to ignore less wolves.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So at the beginning of the game, you're going to start taking hits real fast if you go too quick. Like player one is going to get hosed on turn one probably.
Right. So to recap the structure. So the game's kind of played in three phases.
Right.
In phase one, you're foraging.
It's day.
Day, okay. Yeah, so during the day, you're foraging the forest. Every time you take a card from one of those four resource piles, you can take that in your hand, and you know what that is in your hand. No one else can see what you just got?
Okay. What you got. Nope.
And then you take a wolf card, and you put it face down in front of you. No one knows what that is.
Right.
Wolf card, you don't know. There's one, two, three, four wolves on it.
Yep.
And you keep going around the table until somebody says dusk.
Yep.
And then you enter phase two of the game when you are upgrading.
Okay. Dusk is when you fix things and upgrade.
Fix and upgrade. Okay. And so you spend the resource cards that you've collected to get more animals, to fix things that were destroyed, or to upgrade your structures.
Yep.
Okay. And then night falls, phase three. It's when the wolves attack.
Correct.
You can shoot your arrow. Do you ever get your arrow back?
Yeah. Every turn you can use an arrow.
Okay.
The idea is you shoot a wolf, you go out and get it next day.
You kill wolves, or you hide from wolves, or you let them eat. You choose what animals you're going to let them eat.
Mm-hmm.
But some wolves prefer specific meat.
Yeah, exactly. Like the alpha wolf, if it breaks through, it's always going to eat cows, right? Because it's an alpha wolf. So
okay. It's
not going to go after chickens because that's lame.
Right. But if you don't have any cows, then it gets whatever.
Yeah, if you don't have any cows, it's going to eat the next most valuable thing.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Well, it would probably say the alpha wolf will always eat the most valuable thing in your fence.
So isn't the most valuable thing in your fence you?
No, because you're in the lean-to.
Oh, in the fence. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, I think I'm with that.
So it's got 90 cards right now.
90 cards.
I'd really like to keep it at 90 cards, just because any more than that, it's just a lot of cards.
It's a lot of cards, yeah.
I did a lot of cutting. I got the Wolf deck down to 25, because the Wolf deck recycles on itself. And theoretically, the math says you'll never kill all the Wolves, right? That's the idea.
But testing would play that out, yeah, so when you kill a Wolf, it gets put away. It's not going to go back to the bottom of the pile.
The only ones that go back to the bottom of the pile are the ones you let get away, which I feel like thematically that makes sense, you know?
In the 25 cards, is it an even spread on the distribution?
No.
No, okay.
There's like 7-1 Wolf, 7-2 Wolves, and then the rest of those 11 cards are split between 3, 4, and Alphas.
I might weight it more towards higher numbers.
That's not a bad idea.
You know, just...
It was weighted even more towards higher numbers.
Oh, was it really?
I did scale that back a little. Okay. When I dropped down to the 25, I mostly cut from the lower Wolves.
Did you? Okay. Yeah, I might cut more lower ones and add more higher ones.
I mean, maybe 20 Wolf cards is enough. If there's all higher ones, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think... If the game is too easy, if the game is not punishing enough, it's not compelling enough.
Right.
Yeah. I would really...
That's a good point.
Yeah. Because challenge and punishment is a good motivator, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I want you to feel like you have to take risks early on because you need those resources. But then when you're gaining like, oh, I drew a cow and a pig, crap.
Yeah.
Like, they're just going to get eaten now.
Right. There's nothing I can do to fix all the stuff that was broken in the last turn. Yeah.
So,
but you can save cards. Do you have to spend all your resources?
No. You can keep the cow and the pig in your hand. Yes, absolutely. And play them. Like, but remember that, like, if your fence is broken and there are no animals there, you have to assign damage to whatever's left, which is your lean to.
But if I get supplies or if I get generic resources and I could spend them and fix what I got and upgrade, maybe I would rather fix what I've got and not upgrade yet and save those for next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the things I was thinking too was there's some different structures. You can get like a barn and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have like, I picture that being a card I would play down the barn.
Sure.
And it would have little cube slots on it.
Oh, sure.
So like it can house like 3 animals. So I, three of anything. So I could put 3 cows in there to keep those safe. So that way, if my fence gets busted open, now there's still hit points they have to get through on my.
Yeah.
So.
Sure. You might, you might want to do like 1 cow. It seems like cows should be pretty rare.
That's true. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm just.
So, and cows are worth like 15 points at the end of the game, say, compared to others that are worth like chickens are worth like 2 points, I think, but you have more of them.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. And so you get points for whatever's not dead or destroyed when the 4 resource decks run out.
When 2 of the 4
run out. Oh, when 2 of the 4. Okay.
So.
Yeah, so 20. Yeah, so if you get somebody who's really greedy on a round and they just keep taking more cards, that game could end pretty quick.
Remember, though, that here's what I'm banking on.
Yeah.
I'm banking on that if there's 4 of us playing, player, like, you only get to take one at a time. So I take a card, then you take a card, then the next person takes a card, then the next person takes a card. The first guy, he should never stop. He should always be the one. The guy, player 4, basically, should always take as many cards as people will let him.
Yeah.
Player 3, a little harder decision. Player 2, much harder. And player 1, he's gonna set the pace for the game.
Yeah.
And player 1's going to keep shifting.
Right.
Now, if I'm player 1 and I feel like I'm pretty built up, maybe I'm going to let it go a little farther because I'm not worried about it. But does that make sense?
Yeah. That reversing order there between dusk and night... feels a little funky, but it's pretty key to the structure.
Right, because the idea is, so like, when dusk hits now, player 1 gets to go first. The reason being, because there's limited upgrades, we're going to give player 1 the best chance to upgrade.
Yeah, sure.
Because he's getting hosed. So there's your advantage for being player 1, and then the next phase is your disadvantage for being player 1. Your other advantage for being player 1 is you get to choose when it's dusk, basically.
Yeah,
you are the one with the most compelling reason to say dusk.
Yeah. All right. This is over now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Sun's getting low in the sky.
Yeah.
Best get back.
That's what you have to say. That's what you would probably say.
Just like that?
Every time you would probably say it that way. I'm not wrong.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
This is the guy who played Gunslinger. He was like, I'm calling you out.
Yeah, well, I was drunk at the time. But it was fun. It was more fun that way. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. No, I would love to play it again.
So
I would love to play it again.
Yeah. So I'm hoping a little freeing up. And this is one of the things that I'm taking on the advice of, don't be afraid to put more into your prototype. That was a game where I was determined to make that game be as little components as possible.
Mm-hmm. And now you've thrown in tokens, and
a bunch
cubes
of stuff.
And,
So it's going to make it a little bigger game, but it's not a lot bigger.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I'm going to kind of use that to let it judge its size, right?
Sure. You know? Sure.
But I kind of like the theme, like the scarier, darker theme of like, you know, desperation, really, right? Like,
sure.
I want you to feel desperate. I want you to have to make really tough decisions about what you're going to lose.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I dig it.
Cool.
I dig it. We got anything else?
That is about all we have for today.
Okay, cool. I guess we're going to call it then. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the show. As always, we appreciate it. If you want to send us an email. Oh, yeah. We ran out of emails. We recorded them all for the last show. No emails, no tweets, nothing like that.
It happens. That happens on the second show.
We generally do that every other. Yeah. So, if you want to get in touch with us, email at buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com, Twitter at podcastbtg, at JASlingerland, at poorly_designed. Like us on Facebook, 5-star review on iTunes, buy our games from the website, buildinggamepodcast.com. Call our Google voice number, 770-TEL-BTG. Watch something from nothing. Did I hit all the high points? Did I hit the important stuff?
I feel like you did.
Yeah. Oh, vote for us on Board Game Links. We want that too.
Yeah, come on now.
Yeah. There you go. That is BTG in the can for tonight. Thanks.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
I'm curious if we have any more 5-star reviews on iTunes, what we're up to.
Oh. I don't know.
29 reviews, 29 ratings now.
So. Oh, that's great. Cool. People are doing that, and that's happy times. That is super happy times that make me super happy. What's a comment say?
Practicing the pitch segment of this podcast is my favorite part of any board game podcast.
Ooh.
These guys force themselves to pitch a new game every week, but then they add to, tweak, and mangle the ideas they just pitched. We get to listen in on the actual act of creation. Hearing this way spurs new ideas in me. Several times while sitting in the car, I had to pull over and pause the podcast so I could write good stuff.
Sweet. Who did that one?
Was that anyone? Yude, which is Kevin Yude.
Kevin
Yude.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool. Great.
Jason and Rob have some of the most inspiring conversations about game design. As an amateur designer, I looked for a long time for resources to feel helpful. This one is that, and then some. Thanks for what you do. NGDBO. I don't know who that is.
Sweet. Cool.
What the heck? Oh, Len Wexford back in August posted a thing about how TC is his favorite designer. He posted that on our
iTunes review.
And then we're on another show with TC.
That's great. Yeah.
But hey, 29 ratings. I'll take that.
That's fantastic. So, yeah.
You know what's awesome? What? We had a rating on here of 4 stars at one point, and somebody changed it to 5.
Oh, nice. Are you going to stop recording this?
Sure.